You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we cover down on the local, the state, the national, all of the issues. And like the dude just said, we are solid conservative and just plain right. Boomer, how is it hour number two already?
It just flies by.
Every
day now, it's just like, man, we're already at hour number two.
I mean, apparently the time ticks at the same rate, but if I were doing something else somewhere, I guarantee I'd be going, it's only been 10 minutes.
Oh, I know.
I feel like it's been 10 minutes and we're done with the first hour.
Yeah, it goes so fast.
But, hey, listen, so we're on this number one of the triple dipper, the big tech reckoning. All right, we're covering down on the fact that the Fifth Circuit, which is, you know, in this case, it was regarding a Texas law, the Fifth Circuit federal court is looking at a situation in which a Texas law literally said, hey, any of you social media platforms and otherwise who have 50 million users, you cannot discriminate against the viewpoints of people of Texas. Well, the 11th Circuit, where we live, struck that down already in a similar case once before. We now have split circuits. The question really becomes, I mean, is it controlling content? Is controlling content like a free speech matter? Can the organizations of Facebook and Twitter, can they say they have a right to free speech and their version of free speech is not being forced to carry someone else's contrarian content that they don't like? Well, then again, aren't they the new public square? Don't we have a right to be heard? Who decides what's viewpoints are acceptable and what are not? Well, here's somebody coming on right now with us that whose viewpoint I always enjoy. Matt Clark is the president of the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty. He's an attorney with a long, you know, history of doing great things for people's rights. He has his degree from Liberty University, spent time working in the Alabama Supreme Court, clerking there, also worked for Judge Roy Moore, and now runs the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty. Matt Clark, how are you today?
Hey, Phil, I'm doing great, and it's a pleasure to be with you as always. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, brother. Thank you so much. Appreciate you making some time today. So listen, I have spent the last half hour really talking about the underlying issues. How big is big tech? When is it okay for them to censor, so to speak? When is it not? But the reality is we have split circuits. Talk to us about this Fifth Circuit case. What did it turn on, and what actually happened?
Sure. So I'm sure you know they've already got the background of the 11th Circuit case, which came a few months ago. And a few days ago, the Fifth Circuit came out and went the other way. In that case, like you were talking about in the intro, there was a Texas law that, kind of like the Florida law, said, listen, if you're a big tech platform and you are going to, you know, discriminate based on viewpoint, and I don't think it was explicitly said, but, you know, everybody knows what's going on. If you're explicitly censoring against conservative viewpoints, we got a problem with that, and, you know, there are going to be some rules here if you want to do business in our state. So that case got challenged as well, and the Fifth Circuit came out the other way than the 11th did. And as I'm looking at the opinion, it looks like there are two reasons why the Fifth Circuit chose to disagree with the 11th. First was some of the specifics of the laws. The Texas law, even though it was going after the same objective, was structured a little bit different. I don't think it was as broad in its prohibitions as the Florida law was. So the Fifth Circuit looked at that, found that to be a key difference, and said, you know, because of that, we are going to, you know, the 11th Circuit case is distinguishable. For those, you know, who are not lawyers listening to this, courts usually don't like either looking their fellow colleagues or, you know, judges from other circuits in the eye and telling them you were wrong about this. So if you want to be a gentleman about it, the way to do that is say, well, that case is different because then you spout off a few reasons. So that's how you get around it. So that's what the Fifth Circuit led with, was they said, well, it's a little bit different because the laws are structured differently. But then the Fifth Circuit said, as a backup, that, you know what, while we're on it, though, we got to be honest. We love our brothers over at the 11th Circuit, but we kind of disagree with them on some of these things. And so they decided to consciously pick a fight with the 11th Circuit. And like you said, that's setting up a circuit split for the U.S. Supreme Court to step in, and it's probably going to resolve it.
Well, and that's the interesting dynamic we got here. I mean, and I agree with you. It's interesting to find, you know, circuits that disagree. It's not unusual to find the Ninth Circuit disagreeing with the Fifth or the 11th, because am I correct in saying the Ninth Circuit's out in California? Is that right? I think it is.
They're based in San Francisco, and they're wild.
Yeah, and whatever they say, we do the opposite. Period. It's like
pretty much.
Judge Pryor in the 11th Circuit takes pride in disagreeing with the Ninth Circuit, I feel certain, but nonetheless,
anybody with common sense.
Yeah, exactly. But nonetheless, you've got the Fifth and the 11th are very often aligned. In this case, no. I can't help but wonder, could it have almost been a judicial strategy to move this thing to SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States, by finding reasons why the two would actually disagree, not just distinguish, like be a little different because, but maybe they just chose to disagree to help drive this thing forward to the next level. What do you think?
Well, you know, I can't rule it out as a possibility. Off the top of my head, you know, I would like to think that, you know, judges, including, you know, federal judges, you know, would just call it like they see it. And the Fifth Circuit is a good court, so I think they probably honestly believed what they said. But on the other hand, I'll tell you what, out of the lower federal appeals courts, the Fifth Circuit is filled with what Justice Scalia would have called bloodthirsty originalists. You know, Scalia, as much of a champion as he was for conservative legal causes, he confessed that sometimes he could be a quote-unquote faint-hearted originalist, meaning, you know, sometimes if the consequences were too big, he would shy back and not go all in. But he described Justice Clarence Thomas as a bloodthirsty originalist, like this guy is thirsty to go after, you know, big fights and make a big difference. Well, among the federal appeals courts in the country, I would describe the 11th Circuit as kind of like faint-hearted originalists, but the Fifth Circuit, they are bloodthirsty. They absolutely want to, you know, go as far as they can in, you know, sticking up for fundamental legal issues and fundamental constitutional issues. And so, you know, with that kind of MO for how the Fifth Circuit works, you know, I can't completely rule out that, you know, there might have been a little bit of strategy here to try to get the U.S. Supreme Court to step in. So it could be the case.
Well, and I think we're looking at, I mean, there's the whole argument around Section 230 of what was originally the Telecommunications Act of 1996. I talked about that briefly on my show earlier. Section 230 still exists almost unilaterally. Like much of the Telecommunications Act was struck down by the courts, but Section 230 remained. But it was originally designed to allow them to limit access to pornography and, you know, take things that were truly offensive, like, you know, like child trafficking and all that kind of off their platforms. Well, they've gotten it to where it's viewpoint discrimination now. It's pure viewpoint discrimination whenever they want to, and yet they hide behind Section 230. And I just can't help but wonder if what we just saw out of the Fifth Circuit is going to lead to the demise of Section 230.
Yeah, it might. You know, that's a good question, Phil. So, you know, being completely honest with you, when some of these questions started arising of whether, you know, the government could step in and do anything to big tech, as much as I hated it, I was much more on big tech side. I was looking at it and I thought, you know, at first blush, it looks to me like, you know, I'm really concerned about the free speech effects here. And so when they got talking about repealing Section 230, I found myself thinking, you know, I hate big tech's guts. I hate what they're doing, but, you know, the First Amendment still means something.
Yeah.
But the more I got studying Section 230, the more I realized, you know what, it, you know, this might not be a First Amendment violation, because to your point, you're right, when tech, you know, platforms were brand new, you know, right after Al Gore invented the internet, it was really designed to protect internet service providers if people wound up abusing the platforms. And so, you know, you and I have probably seen over our careers, there are some ambitious plaintiff lawyers out there that get creative with finding ways to attack people with deep pockets. And so it seems like, you know, Section 230 was originally meant to establish the common sense principle that just because somebody is using your internet to do something bad, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're liable for it. And that's fine. But it was really based on the theory that these internet service providers and these platform providers are neutral in all this. They are just giving people a place to talk. And if other folks abuse that, then that's on them. Well, now that they're actively discriminating, they really can't claim that they're being neutral anymore. So if you're not being neutral anymore, then you're not really entitled to the protection of neutrality. Maybe we do need to open it up and ask, you know, if, like, for instance, in the Hunter Biden laptop, story that big tech very actively censored or other things like that, you know, at some point you have to start wondering whether big tech is acting as an arm of the government when liberals are in power, and whether they need to be subjected to the kind of liability that the government does if they violate your First Amendment rights.
Well, that was well put. That was very well put. All right. Well, Matt, so from a purely legal perspective, where do we go from here? Do you see Facebook and Meta and Twitter, the rest of them, are they going to appeal the Fifth Circuit ruling?
That's a good question. Honestly, right now, I think they probably will, because right now the only justice that's really stuck his neck out there to kind of align with the Fifth Circuit's view has been Clarence Thomas. Thomas was really instrumental in helping me see the other side. Like I said, I used to think, you know, I hate big tech, but if you touch them, it's a First Amendment violation. Thomas really provided the historical background to what some of the exceptions to the First Amendment were. He thought, you know, I think some of them apply to what big tech is doing today. And as always, he had a masterful analysis. But that's just one vote. And I think in that same case, if I'm not mistaken, a majority of the justices went out of their way to kind of clear their throats and say, by the way, these tech giants might have First Amendment rights that haven't come up yet. But we're just flagging the possibility here that maybe the government can, violate the First Amendment if they start cracking down on big tech. So anyway, if I'm the lawyers for Meta, I'm looking at that. I'm counting votes on the court. And I think, you know, pretty much all of the conservatives except Thomas have kind of cleared their throats about the possibility of big tech having First Amendment rights. So I don't know. If I were them, I would think the Supreme Court looks like it's friendly. So yeah. You know, the possibilities that it could backfire on them, you know, they could wind up getting into the weeds, and then, you know, Clarence Thomas's viewpoint could wind up prevailing. That's happened before. So it is a little bit of a risk, but I would not be surprised if, you know, Meta tries to ask the Supreme Court to step in.
Well, I suspect you're right. I mean, they've got so much riding on it, and they've got a ruling in the 11th Circuit already in their favor, and they can try to create sympathy off the previous ruling from the 11th Circuit, which was already in place before the 5th. But I guess, you know, I saw too one of the solutions, and we only got about a minute left here, but one of the solutions I saw being posited by somebody on the Federalist, I believe. I had a great article from the Federalist. I've got it right here, dated yesterday, called "Federal Court Deals Major Blow to Big Tech and Sets Up SCOTUS to Restore Free Speech." This particular article, though, dealt with a lot of different issues and really broke it down pretty well. And they proposed the idea that it might be that these platforms could sort of get out of the doghouse if they would just give people the individual right to do their own screening, like you could put your own filters in place that stop you from seeing certain kinds of stories or content or hashtags or whatever else, and not be them doing it themselves in a blanket fashion for everybody. I don't know. We'll see.
That sounds good to me.
Well, we'll see what happens, Matt. But listen, if you see anything or have some new analysis, let me know. We'll jump on it again. But I appreciate your time today, brother.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Phil.
All right, Matt Clark, Alabama Center for Law and Liberty. He does amazing work. You want to tell him, by the way, Matt, you still there? You want to tell him how to find you?
Yeah, go to alabamalawandliberty.org. Last time I was on, we were having some website issues. Those are fixed now, so we're back up and running. So check us out, and then we're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram under Law and Liberty AL.
All right, good enough. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate you. All right, Boomer, I ran long just to get that in with Matt, but go ahead and take us to the break. We'll come back and have a very short moment or two before we go back to the bottom of the hour news. This is a big deal. 71 or 72% of all Americans get their news sourcing through Twitter, according to one study. The Pew Institute did a study on this. Folks, this is more than just, oh, I wanted to share a picture of the ham sandwich I had for lunch or what my cousins did at the graduation ceremony. No. This is where most people get their information, strangely enough. It's true. And when they control the information and they bend it, it can change perception. And that's what we don't want. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.